Hello everyone, I'm Simone from Epica, and you're listening to Side Gems with Brian Reisman.
Greetings, everyone. This is Brian Reisman, host of Side Jams, here with Frank Bello. He's the man from Anthrax. He's got a solo project recently, Altitudes and Attitudes. Altitudes and Attitudes.
It's tough, I told Elston, you.
Also the author of this book, this great memoir.
Thank you, Brian.
To check out, he also has a story in this Anthrax graphic novel collection from Z2 Comics.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying your new EP. You know, the title track has a very, it's got a kind of an old school punk vibe to
yeah,
it.
That's the idea. Just let it all hang out and go back to your roots and, you know, let the anger go out. That's the fun of it all, you know, writing. It's like any kind of angst, the book, all that stuff. The great vehicle that we have is creation. You know, it means a lot to me when I can get all this stuff out. You know, the book was a real big help. But then after the book, Brian, I didn't realize it. After the book, I wrote all this stuff from my past, and that really brought up a lot of stuff that I thought I've compartmentalized in therapy. And what happened was it came out again and it wouldn't leave. So that's why I wrote the EP, because there was so much inside. And that's what, it was great to have that outlet. And that's where the EP came from, because the songs were just coming from the book. I was like, I can't get rid of this stuff. And when I'm in a bad way, I go to my guitar and write. And that's what happened. So I'm glad, believe me, that I'm going to be in jail. So yeah. Choose. Well, what's the better choice?
So now did you have your Richard Simmons figure with you when you were recording this?
I just have, Richard's around me all the time. All right. We have to put, look, NECA rules. And that's all I have to say. My friend Randy's company, NECA, and I'm not endorsing.
Yeah, I know Randy Falk. Yeah.
He's the best. They are the best at what they do. And look, you look at this and it makes you happy. And then I go right to the Howard Stern, that episode. You know, Gary. Oh, I don't know if you know Howard Stern, but it's a thing that when he was on, it was one of the best episodes ever. So Richard Simmons rules always.
I'm going to have him right there in the background. Fabulous.
Yeah, he's watching this.
So, you know, when we were chatting for Billboard a year ago, I remember, like, what could you talk about for Side Jams? And we were discussing the fact that neither of us is actually really good at fixing things.
Horrible.
And so you have like this failed Mr. Fix-It career at home. And I wanted to know when did the first realization come that you're like, this isn't going to be good?
The first realization when I tried to change a trap. You know what a trap is? Under your sink. It's in the bathroom sink. It's supposed to be a simple thing. The plumber told me, I don't have to come up. Listen to what you do. He told me what to do. It didn't penetrate. I'm pathetic. These don't work. They work on guitar and bass, but these don't work when I pick up a damn tool. And that's just the way it is. It sucks, right? So I attempt this. I shut the damn water off. I make sure everything is right. Three times over, I'm checking. All right, everything's off. I'm going to do it now, right?
Yeah.
Brian, I don't know what happened. I'm telling you the water was off. I'm telling you. For some reason, I was able to pull the trap off, and water came out of everywhere. It was a disaster. I couldn't, I was like an old show where the water was just coming everywhere in your face and all that stuff. I'm like, what the hell? Towels everywhere, you know, it's leaking downstairs. I mean, it was a disaster. So I found in my basement, there's a main water shutoff valve, like everybody has. If they have, I didn't know what that was. I didn't even know what the hell it was, but finally this big sign, water shutoff. I'm pathetic. Shut off water valve. I pushed this thing right away, and all of a sudden, I mean, my wife's not screaming anymore, and everything's good. And so then, what was it? I think that day for the plumber was $400. Yeah, to come just to fix what I attempted to fix. So he said, if you would have done it with me, it would have been like a $200 call. I could have saved $200 that day if I didn't try anything. So the message is, don't try. Don't try. It doesn't matter. You're going to screw it up, Frank, so don't do it anymore. Electricity, my wife won't even let me look at electricity stuff, because that's like the whole house. You go up and that's it. It goes on fire. You can't do it. So I'm not, I would love to change up an outlet. I would love to do that, but no way.
Well, you know, it's what Yoda says, do or do not. So just you do not.
Do not. Do not. You know what? I get it. Look, some people are talented that way.
There is no try.
YouTube is great to watch. But, you know, I tried that too. YouTube is not BelloTube. It doesn't work for me at all. It doesn't work my way. So I'm just going to leave to the professionals. That's it. So I'm, you know what I can do? I can clean pretty well. I can wash clothes. I know that. I didn't screw that up. So when it comes to fix it though, I'm going to leave it.
So now, I mean, obviously with, if you're not good at fixing things at home, I hope or assume that without, what about playing bass? If you have issues with the bass, do you just leave it to your bass tech or do you are actually fairly good with that?
I attempt it. I'm not good at it. I'll be honest with you, but I'm getting better from what I've heard. I could change strings. I could change pickups. You see my neck, I can get it. I can get my neck with the, you know, the action of the basses and stuff and guitars. I can get it to where I almost like it, but my tech Jeff is a master at it. He's an absolute master at it. So I'll usually ask him to do it just to get it. If I have to record, especially, he's got to do everything. So, cause I don't trust myself. It's got to be intonated and all that. He's the pro and I'm just a novice. I just play, you know?
You're a novice after over 40 years on bass, kid.
But you know what? I love the whole bass. I love bass. I love guitar. But there's some people have a knack for doing that. And my tech Jeff, he just has that knack that I can get it lower, but I can get it low where I think it's okay. But man, he's got the butter where it's just smooth, man. And where you don't have to even think about it. So if I have to get real with it or record something or go live somewhere, Jeff's going to have my guitar working on it. It's the better way. It's smart.
Now, what's the biggest Mr. Fix-It calamity that you had?
On guitar or just in general?
In the house.
I'll tell you, man, I tried to put some flooring in one time.
Oh, boy.
And here's a note to self. Never, ever try to rent a machine. You know, one of those drill things to get the tiles up? Never do that on your own unless you know what you're doing. Never. I mean... what happens is you dig up and then all of a sudden you dig the wood underneath it, which you don't realize you're doing because all of a sudden you're digging into the wood and guess who has to come back and fix it? The professional. The professional, after Frank tries to put in a floor, yeah, sure, I can do it. This is why, see that? That's been beaten down. That, sure, I can do it. That voice is gone. It's gone. Now I know. Don't try, Frank. Leave it alone. The professionals will be here in a little while. You're going to pay through the nose. That's the way it's going to work. Otherwise, you pay double through the nose because you're going to screw it up and then they'll have to fix your problem. So I feel like this is a therapy session, but this is what, yeah. So that flooring thing, Brian, that flooring thing was a bit expensive, to say the least. Yeah, I'm not going to do that again.
I really feel like there should be a song in this somewhere, one of your next solo songs.
There will be. There will be. Yeah, and my last dime that I spend on this stuff when I'm really broke, and this is where all my money, that angst will go into this song. That's what's going to happen.
So, like on the road, has there ever been a situation where you were? I remember I was trying to think. I think I went to visit a friend of mine, and I think I broke something. There was some piece either with the sink or the toilet that I broke, and I had to drive out to Walmart somewhere, and I wanted to fix it before he came back. And I managed to fix it, whatever it was that I broke. But like, I was like, oh man, this is just not
well. There's been stuff. I mean, in the hotel rooms we stay out on the road, you know, you sit down. I sat on this really nice hotel, but you think they'd have a better table. I just happened to lean. I saw something on TV. I lost my train of thought. I leaned on the table. You ever just sit down on it? You didn't realize it was right there. It was little table. And maybe my ass is fatter than I thought it was. But all of a sudden, dude, this thing snapped off. Snapped off. And the only way out of this, I couldn't look. This thing was cracked in half. It was snapped. The only way out of this was to hide the evidence. And this was years ago. What? Where am I going to get it?
How do you hide the evidence of the table?
Aha! This is what you do. This is what you have to be smart about. Now, this is where you wait for the cleaning lady who's cleaning rooms down on your floor, right? You wait till you're in one room. She usually opens two rooms at the same time. That vacant room that she's not working on has that same table. Aha, right? What happens? You got to be quick. You got to be quick. I didn't mean to do it, but you know, you got to be quick. Zip, zip, and everything's better. that was a while ago. It was years ago. But
who got charged for your calamity is what I want to know. Like, who's the unlucky person?
You know, it was a vacant room, so I don't think anybody did. I think they just needed to replace the table. Hey, look, it was a lot of money anyway. Those rooms were expensive, so they were overpriced. So therefore, they have the money for it. It was a long time ago, and I don't want to be liable for it. So.
I had a friend who was, you know, used to do a lot of club touring, and he told me that at one point he and his guitarist lay down in, like, it was whatever, it was one of those cheap motel chains, and like raised a pillow, and there was like an ant farm like underneath the pillow. Have you ever had any horrifying hotel rooms that you walked into?
Okay, not to get disgusting with you, Brian. How graphic do you want me to be? Is it safe?
Well, you know what? We'll see. We can always edit it out if it's too much.
Okay, there's nothing like in going to one of those hotel rooms, and this just happened, just as God's honest truth. I've been doing it for 40 years. So you go from disgusting rooms, you know, like the cheap ones, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you get to the higher end ones. So in the early days, you know, you're lucky you can get a bed, right? There's no money, all that stuff. So you get into the bed of that night after your club gig, and you go in, and you're hoping that it's clean, right? So there were times, Brian, in this life where you're so exhausted, you just go right into bed. You just want to conk out, right?
Oh, no.
These are the nights you have to be careful of. So sleeping, I get up in the morning, and you know the scene in The Godfather, right?
Yeah.
Right? That the famous horse scene. There's no horse, right? But what there was blood.
And wow.
There was blood, and it was underneath. So if I just pulled the sheets and went underneath when I was tired, didn't see anything. But that freaked me the frig out. I mean, it freaked me the hell out because, and I'll be honest with you, man, it wasn't old. That's, I'll leave it there, right? So somebody must have checked out. Whatever they did, right?
Wow.
Whatever they did, they did. Maybe they set the bed up so the maid thinks, maybe the person cleaning it up thinks it's like, I don't have to change it today. They didn't touch the bed. But let me tell you something, that bed was not made up. And there you go. So it was, I mean, when you get up like that, that's not the way to start a morning. So you're screaming. I was like, what the fuck? You know, I'm just screaming at the top of my lungs. What is this? I thought I was bleeding at first. I thought it was me. I said, am I bleeding out? Where am I bleeding from? You know, it's very much like that scene. You start screaming, what the fuck? And then you go to the front of the desk. There's no front desk. The person at the desk, think about that. There's a partition with the person behind the desk that doesn't want to be bothered with anybody. So I say, look, there's blood in my bed. You know, there's blood in my bed. You know, I'm letting you know we're not paying for this room. There's blood in my, I slept in blood last night. It was one of those. So yeah, it was disgusting. I don't know what happened. If it was a sexual, whatever the hell it was on me. And that's disgusting, period.
It was on you.
It was on me.
You just don't want.
Not to sound disgusting. There's been those days again in the early days again.
Sure.
Use condoms. Those aren't fun, especially if it's not you doing it. It's like, what do you do? Why is there a used condom in my bed? That kind of stuff happened a lot. But the blood thing freaked me out because it was blood and it went on my leg. It was on my leg. It kind of it's like this, and that kind of freaked me out. It's like, who is this? And am I sick now? All this stuff. It goes through your head. Oh my God, am I going to get some kind of disease from this blood? All that. And who needs that? I don't want to be bothered.
But, you know, speaking of horse heads, I mean, obviously you and The Godfather, you have done some acting in the past.
Yeah.
You've been in a couple movies. You've been on Law & Order. It's been a little while, though. What was the last film you were in? I've been looking it up because I know you played Richard Hell. But that you did a movie called One Long Day. Was that the last one?
Oh, One Long Day. Yeah, that was an.
Best Man in the Dark.
Yeah, that was only like two or three scenes in that one though. That wasn't fully me. But the other stuff was Richard Hell and Greetings from Tim Buckley, and One Long Day was I was one of the leads there. That was fun. It was independent. Never went anywhere because there's no money. But yeah, I enjoy it. You know, look, you know what I found. Brian, years ago, I found that because I was trying to find, after the abandonment stuff and all that, I was just trying to find who I was after my dad took off. I mean, in retrospect, you really look for that. It's like, who am I? Because I wasn't taught anything like who I am as a man and all that stuff. Yeah. I think acting really made me find out who I was by living through other people. It's really weird how that works. You kind of have to... It's my base. My base is who I am, and I can go into other characters, you know, that way. As when I found myself, the other characters would come out. I always found that really interesting. It's like, okay, this must be me, because I'm finding fun in these characters. But I know who I am now because I can just jump into this guy or jump into that guy, and I find it fun. I still find it fun. It's like playtime. It's really like playtime. And I love the art of it. It's just like writing a song. It really is just like writing a song. It's I equate that because you have to start somewhere, you know, and there's a middle part and you end somewhere coming through the door. Not to sound too actors and all this stuff. It's stuff you learn in acting class. But I thought it was fun. And, you know, I studied with some great people. Bill Esper from the he's from the Meisner Technique. He's awesome. Awesome. Rest his soul. He passed. Just the actor studio. Just I loved it. I live in New York, so it was easy for me. I can go to the city, you know, and just watch all these great actors work. So I really found it fun and just fulfilling. And it just took away some kind of void for me. The fame nonsense. Who gives a shit about fame, really? I mean, what is it really? We've all been famous. It doesn't get you anywhere. I want to get into the art of it and fill that hole that I have. I have this gut hole, you know, and I want to fill it with something that makes me feel good. And that makes me feel good.
I mean, did that Married with Children appearance you guys did like 30, like almost 30 years ago now, was that when the acting bug bit you?
No, I was into it before that because I always liked, I studied before that, but I didn't... I found that weird, to tell you the truth, because with my band, it was crossing two worlds for me. But I loved it because they wrote us a great script where we had funny lines. They actually gave the band funny lines that people laughed at. And the actors, even when with the table rethrow, I remember Ed O'Neill specifically laughing at lines that we were giving. So that was a big deal for us. And maybe it carried over from that because I did some more stuff after that. And I went deeper into class and studying it and all that. But that was just fun. And that was a great, great advertisement for the band and great for promotional after that. I mean, I don't know. There's not a lot of people who know Anthrax who haven't seen that episode. So and Married with Children, they say it's one of the most popular episodes for whatever reason it is. I don't know. But it's cool.
Well, it was very off the cuff and flippant.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that helps. And what was it like? I mean, were you a fan of Richard Hell before you played him?
Yeah, I knew. Well, fan, I knew who he was. I knew who he was. And I went deep, especially when I got it. Even when you start reading, what happens is, Brian, you start reading. My agent gave me the notes for it and stuff, the sides for it, and said, okay, Richard, I know who he is and stuff. But then you dig in and you start listening to more. And then you really start, the whole New York scene. And you really dig in, then you really have a lot more knowledge in your head about who you're talking about, who you want to be. That's why I found it easier, just to be him, and because I had so much knowledge on him after a while. But it was fun. That's what I find interesting. Play a real human, a real person who really existed, especially in the music world. You know, and a guy is a legend. So I find that really interesting.
So now, are there any other things outside of music that make you happy? Any other outside passions or hobbies that you're really into?
No, you know what it is, man. I'm at the age now, and I think I've been through a big storm of things in my life, and I just want to pay it forward. I think that's where I'm at in my life. It's a weird thing to say now, because I always thought I was trying to work my career. But for me, it's really about passing it on to the future, because I want to see future musicians. I want to see future bass players that want to make a name for themselves and create what I call beauty into the atmosphere. I think it's important now. So I'm very much into that and just helping people that want to learn bass or whatever they want to do. Songwriting, I think that's really important. And write my own great. I want to write great songs. I want to write great songs because I don't think we could ever have enough great songs in the world. So. I look forward to collaborating with people, and that's where I'm at right now.
What's the biggest life lesson that you've learned?
Oh, I learned, here's what I did learn. Never say never. Never say never, because you could always do something, you know, because, I mean, when you get beat down enough, Brian, there's a time you say, oh, man, am I going to get up? You know, I mean, I say it in my book, am I going to get up after being beat down so much? Not sometimes physically, sometimes emotionally, and just times life just takes a shit on you, right? What I did learn is, if you don't get up and you don't try, nothing happens. So you have to spark it up. And that's what I sound like this is one of those infomercials, but it is true. I've learned that. It's like, you have to keep trying. And if as many people tell you no, that's why you should say yes. You know, because there's a lot of no people in this world. I've learned that, man. It's like, no, it's about pushing it and going for it and making it happen. and it's a never ending thing. It's a never ending thing. I don't think it ever stops because you're always going to try. I'm still trying to write that great song. I'm still trying to write that great bass line. I'm still trying to be the best dad I could, you know, all that stuff. But that's what life is. It's a constant, you know, perpetual motion, man.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned from acting?
Who I am. Who I am. I'm pretty confident in my skin right now because of acting. Because of acting and then later on songwriting. But acting got me to know who I am, where I can jump into other things and know that I have a foundation. It's weird. It's weird even to say that acting did that. But it's a lot of I did a lot of studying because I loved finding out about me, about what makes me tick and all that stuff. And it's more like a therapy. It was weird. It was really being like in therapy about finding myself. And then I could jump into all these other things and, you know, even in music. So then I could jump into what I want to jump into musically. It's weird. It did work for me. I don't know if it works for everybody, but it worked for me.
What was the most difficult scene for you as an actor?
God. I'll tell you, there was a couple of scenes that I did in that Richard Hell thing that I don't even know if they made it into the I was working with William Sadler. You know who William Sadler is?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Great actor.
Of course.
Great actor.
Not only is he Death in not only the Grim Reaper in the Bill and Ted movies, but he did a great Tales from the Crypt episode. He can be really intense.
Awesome dude, right? Sweetheart of a guy. Now that guy took me in his hands with some of the scene. We had a couple of scenes together, which was great. And all he wanted me to do was just look at him and just be, and just say, Frank, just lay back and be with me and we're going to be fine. And he made me feel so comfortable. He made me feel so, I felt like I was just one on one with him. And there was other people in the scene, but it was just, I felt like I was just with him and he had dialogue with me and all that good stuff. I don't even know if it made the film. I think it's only saw the film once, but it was so enjoyable. And that was the most intimidating part also. It was the most intimidating because I know his work. I know how great he is and what he's capable of. And to learn off of that, to learn and him to just take me in his palms like that. And really, I felt like I was being cuddled. And I was like, man, this is awesome. So I enjoyed the moment, but that was intimidating and amazing at the same time, right?
I should ask you about the One World story that you wrote in here, because we talked about it. Because it's got a very dark slant to it.
I'm sorry. That's the other side. You know, I'm glad that people say I'm a nice guy and stuff. I love that. And look, I'm not blowing myself up. And I definitely have my prick days. Like everybody else. Everybody does. But look, there's the other side that goes dark. And I find putting it into something like this makes it easier for me to deal with. And that's why. This is a great outlet, another outlet where you can get your rage out. And I find it really interesting where you can create something and create a character that is kind of you that you want to, that you're thinking of this stuff, like some of the dialogue and that stuff I wrote. I can easily see that this dark side of me saying that to people, because there's days where everything just gets to you. But, you know, obviously you can't say that in life. So you just put it into paper and people can hopefully have a chuckle at it, know that it's not real, it's not the real person. But I found that this character was fun, you know, and put it into this cartoon angry guy, and that's the other side of him. And he's a day-to-day guy, banker, dealing with people that aren't so nice a lot of the times. Look, I've been, and we've all been to banks where people just start raging on the bank teller. The poor bank teller just trying to make a living, and people are going off on them. And I just put myself in that bank teller's place. It's like, wait, you know what I'd like to do to you right now if I wasn't getting paid by this company, you know, and the cameras weren't on right now? You think what you would do. That's what I put into that book. That's what I put into that story. So the Dark Frank. There is a Dark Frank, and I find him interesting, but I have to keep him at bay because I don't want him coming out too much. I think everybody has that, you know? Everybody has a dark side.
Well, listen, Frank, it was great to chat with you again.
Same here, my brother. Thank you. Always fun. Always fun, Brian. We go deep. We go deep, and then we come back. It's fun. We go in and out, and I love it. So it's always fun.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.